Good morning and welcome to Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us this morning. We're also very pleased to having back here in the studio with us David Desser. He's professor of cinema studies at University of Illinois. And for some time now, every once in a while, he stops by and we talk a little bit about movies. He is, in addition to just being a guy who likes movies, he also has a professional interest and is particularly interested in the cinema of Asia, of East Asia, and has written about Hong Kong films and Japanese films. And just last time he was here, and we were just chatting before we got going, he's lately has been watching a lot of Indian films. And when he's on the show here, we talk a little bit about the movie business and about movies that we have seen and invite people who are listening to do the same. If you'd like to call in and tell us about something that you've seen, that would be great. If you have seen a movie that you thought was just awful and you'd like to say to people who are listening, stay away, avoid this movie at all cost, you may do that. And other sorts of questions about the world of cinema are certainly welcome, and I know Dave would do his best to give you an answer. 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line, and that's good anywhere that you can hear us. That's 800-222-9455. Well, good to have you back.
My pleasure, as always.
We were just chatting here just a little bit about how you said that maybe recently or not quite so recently you've been indulging in in Indian movies. And it is true that that the Indian cinema is it's one of the biggest movie businesses in the world.
It is.
And it's so kind of quirky that I think if you don't immediately get it, I don't think that you will. So I guess there have been, I think, some Indian films that have had some popular success in Britain and in the United States. But I think most of them just don't people don't quite get them. And I one of the things I wonder is whether it's possible that they could have greater popularity outside of India and of the, you know, community of the Indian diaspora,
yes.
Or whether people who weren't Indian would grab onto them and think that they were kind of cool and enjoy watching something.
Well, that's a very good question. First of all, we need to distinguish. In India, there's a lot of film industries, and it has to do with the linguistic groups. As I recall, I believe, I could be wrong, and maybe people out there can correct me, but I think there are 14 official languages in the Indian subcontinent. And three of the languages make a lot of movies, Tamil, Telugu, and Hindi. And it's the Hindi cinema that I've been very interested in, although I do from time to time buy and or rent Tamil movies, which often influence the Hindi cinema. So they're somewhat different but also somewhat similar in the conventions that sometimes put people off. I mean, they're all at least 2.5 hours long. But it is the case that Hindi cinema especially keeps thinking about that mythical crossover hit. What will be the hit? And it stems from the perhaps surprising Academy Award nomination for Best Picture for Lagaan a few years ago. And then they made another movie the next year called Devdas, which they really were pushing for that Oscar nomination. And when they didn't get it, there was a lot of anger. Why didn't Devdas get it? So they keep looking for that mythical crossover. And they also look for the crossover of their stars. And at the moment, they're very interested in the career of former Miss World, Aishwarya Rai, who's finishing up, or maybe has already finished, the new movie by the woman who directed Bend It Like Beckham, Gurinder Chatha, who's doing a Jane Austen adaptation called Bride and Prejudice. So it will be an English-language film with some American, some British stars and Aishwarya Rai, and maybe they're looking for her. She was invited to be on the Cannes Film Festival jury a couple of years ago, and there were rumors, always denied, that she would be the next Bond girl. But she's a superstar in the Hindi cinema. A lot of their superstars don't have any interest in kind of crossing over, but I think Aishwarya Rai might very well. But the idea that they may make a movie that will really be a super hit to non, you know, the Indian diaspora, the audiences who live outside of India, are called NRI, non-resident Indians. And they make movies, the Hindi cinema makes a lot of movies with NRI audiences in mind, and there are people living in the diaspora who make NRI-style films. But the idea that the Hindi cinema might cross over to mainstream audiences is something that they keep wanting. But it has been influential, nevertheless. You know, it is kind of cool and kind of hip to borrow aspects of the what they call Bollywood cinema. And everyone in India says, oh, we hate the term Bollywood. But they use it all the time in India. This is Bollywood this, Bollywood this. So they may hate it, but it's Bollywood. And that's when you say Bollywood, you mean the commercial Hindi cinema that's proving slowly but surely to be one of the musical numbers in Moulin Rouge was a Bollywood song. And so, you know, that they thought, well, now that it's very hip from Moulin Rouge, maybe it'll, you know, cross over. But so far, only small moments like that.
Yeah. Among the probably if you have never seen one of these movies, among the things that you will not get is the musical numbers. And the fact that there's this is this convention that periodically, at several points throughout the film, the there will be a break in the dramatic action, and the actors will do a musical number that may in fact have nothing at all to do with the movie, other than, you know, you may have a couple and there may be a love affair, and the song might be about how
they love each other,
how they love each other, and that may involve being filmed.
Yes.
Dancing and singing in strange exotic locations, sometimes not even in India.
Oh, no.
They'll be in India, and then it'll cut to, they'll be in some other country.
I was watching a maybe 5-6-year-old, it's hard to tell this, sometimes the movies you can't tell what year they were made. I was watching a Hindi movie just the other night of a few years old, not too much, with Aishwarya Rai, and all of a sudden one of the musical numbers was shot in, of all places, Monument Valley, Utah, home to John Ford's classic westerns. And believe me, this movie was not a classic western. And not only do they shoot these movies sometimes in locations that are not in India, but I often wonder about the safety of the actors, because they're on the precipice of some of these buttes, singing and dancing. And I said, A, Monument Valley, and B, I hope they don't fall off. So it is. Oh, they love their locations elsewhere. In particular, they love Switzerland, and I often feel sorry for the actresses who will go to the snow-covered mountains of Switzerland, dressed in their saris only, and the actor will have on his nice coat, mm-hmm. and the actresses will be in the flimsy silk saris. And I said, it must be a little chilly.
And they may even loll in the snow.
And they will roll.
She's wearing a sari and she's making snow angels or something.
Well, what happens in the Hindi cinema now is some of the more artistic-minded are starting to resent the conventions. And when they talk about their musical numbers and they say they don't want to do it, they say, we don't want to dance around the trees. So they too will. But for me, they're not that far from, of course, the classic Hollywood musicals, where the musicals express heightened emotional states. And thus they are related, if not to the plot, to the growth and development of the character. But also there's something very nice about 100 films a year, the bulk of which have between 5 and 8 new songs. And so you can, you know, to say that the songs aren't really part of the movie, and there's many instances where and sometimes critics complain, the only thing good about the movie is the songs. But that's part of the movie as well. And it reminds me not so much necessarily of the classic Hollywood musicals, but of the 20s and 30s on Broadway, where you would have Broadway shows that maybe ran 100, 150 performances because there was always something new to push them out, and what used to be known as Tin Pan Alley. And I really think the 12 or so great composers or composing and lyric teams are the modern equivalent of Tin Pan Alley. And so it's really quite an interesting aspect of the movies is to have all this. The word for a film in Hindi is filmy. So it's kind of like filmy music. is the big thing there. And of course, what were their, and the music is just as an important part of the film, because they'll often release the musical score 6 months to a year before the film comes out. And sometimes they'll even finish financing the film by the CDs and cassettes of the music.
Mm-hmm. Well, that should almost give you a guaranteed audience. If the score is popular, then you figure everybody who bought it is going to go and see the movie.
And then one of the things they want to see is, how are the songs picturized? That's their term for the what we might call choreographed and shot, is picturization. How are the music numbers picturized?
Well, we have a caller here, and we'd certainly welcome others. David Desser is our guest. He's professor of cinema studies at University of Illinois, and every once in a while is here, and we talk about movies, whatever kind of questions that you have, whatever you want to talk about, that's fine. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. Here's someone in Farmer City on our line number one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I am really finding the conversation on Indian film fascinating, and I really hate to change the subject, but I'm going to.
Oh, that's fine.
Back when I was very young, they used to show cartoons on TV occasionally, like Astro Boy. We used to refer to it as Japanimation.
Mm-hmm.
I have to admit that I was not at all impressed by those things and kept that attitude for a long time until a couple of years ago. My children showed me a Japanese animated TV series called Cowboy Bebop.
Oh, yes.
Ooh, I love Cowboy Bebop.
I've heard that.
Oh, yes.
Then I saw the movie. I find them fantastic. And then again, a couple of years ago, Roger Ebert had the Japanese film Metropolis.
Oh, yes.
In his film festival, which was, ooh, ironically enough, a story by the guy who did Astro Boy, which I hated as a kid. So all I'm really asking is if you would just kind of educate me a little bit about anime, not Japanimation.
Yes.
And I will go ahead and hang up and let you discuss that.
All right. Thank you.
Good.
Go,
well, here's a question somewhat up my alley, as it were, in my expertise in Japanese cinema, though I'm not a major fan of anime, though Cowboy Bebop and Metropolis and, of course, the Miyazaki Hayao Spirited Away and Princess Mononoke are quite fantastic, and there's a handful of others. Astro Boy was part of that moment in Japanese cinema when the mainstream audience, this is in the 60s, so it's old, you know, this stuff isn't all that, you know, if you compare it to Disney, it seems quite primitive and all, but it was part of the period when the Japanese popular audience had abandoned the cinema and was finding its way to television, and of course one of the main TV audiences is kids. But I also think at that same time that the Japanese were very much on the cutting edge of the combination of science fiction, youth or children's programming, and toys and games. And so they really picked up on the kinds of, let's say, modern stuff. I remember thinking, boy, the Japanese were doing Astro Boy, and the Americans were doing Davy Crockett. And the Japanese were playing with ray guns, and we were playing with six guns. So they really were on the cutting edge of kind of science fiction-y stuff. And that's really the way they've kept up. But anime in Japan is a huge business tied in with the major, major publishing phenomenon of comics, or what they call manga. And the majority of anime are based on manga. Manga are really closer to, say, graphic novels each month than our more thin comic books. But the whole manga/anime movement is extremely popular in Japan and also throughout Asia, and now in recent years in Europe and America. Far more influential and far more monetarily successful than live action cinema. So it's there what the big budget Hollywood blockbuster is to America, anime is to Japan. And so they put a lot of money and a lot of time and effort into anime. There's a lot of it, and there's a whole lot of manga with a lot of audiences, but on the whole, it's really very concerned with the kind of futuristic/youth-oriented, but very artistic, and that's my, there's so much of it. That's what's really incredible, is how much, and it really stems from how much manga there is. Now, they don't turn all of their manga into anime, because they're a manga that have essentially all kinds of audiences, except maybe for senior citizens. I've never seen senior citizens manga. But young boys, young girls, teenage boys, teenage girls, salaryman manga, housewife manga, and then all the stuff that we don't even want to talk about on radio, let alone you couldn't show pictures of. Mm-hmm. But the anime is geared toward, I think why it's successful is it really knows that it has a worldwide audience now. Whereas I suppose Astro Boy maybe had been a kind of, oh, that's interesting, and maybe we can show it in the U.S. But now they really know that they have an international audience or global audience. So they've managed to find themes such as ecology, such as world peace, such as the universality of youth coming of age that really strike universal chords. Mm-hmm. And of course, they in a way, a lot of the anime is pre-sold by the popularity of the manga.
Yeah, and there's an enormous range of both quality of art and writing,
yes.
And I suppose it depends on because you've got everything from something like Princess Mononoke, where it's really beautifully done in very cinematic ways, and then you have Pokemon, and
very inexpensive, and then the use of CGI. Now I'm not an expert in how anime gets done. For many years, the sort of people who loved animation would always say that Disney was the standard because of how it was shot, with one, the cell animation as compared to computer animation, background and foreground. A lot of the stuff, will have a background that stays the same and the characters will move, whereas the real good anime like Nausicaa and the Valley of the Wind will have foreground and background things move. And so how many cells do you use per second? How detailed are the characters, et cetera? And the quality stuff is quite nice now. But then, of course, there's a lot of stuff that seems fairly primitive. But even stuff that isn't drawn very well, like Ranma 1/2, has such a great premise. And only the Japanese could have come up with Ranma 1/2, which is a teenage boy who, when exposed to warm water, turns into a teenage girl. But his father doesn't turn into an older woman. His father turns into a panda bear. So this is a premise that if I had come up with, I don't know if I would have had to seen the shrink. But the Japanese have made, hundreds of episodes of Ranma 1/2. But the animation is fairly, let's say primitive or rudimentary. But the stories are quite popular. Yeah. And so there you go.
Well, we have some other folks here on cell phones, and I want to try to get to them so they don't have to wait too much longer. Let's go next to line 2. That's next in line. Hello.
Hello. I hate to bounce you back to Bollywood again. what was the scene in Moulin Rouge that was Bollywood?
One of the songs. One of the songs that's performed, in fact, it's performed by an Indian woman at the beginning of the film called Chumma Chumma. So it's one of the songs in Bali. But I think a lot of the attitude, if you notice the production design, there's all kinds of large elements, elephants, all kinds of hanging curtains. So I think a lot of production design is Indian influenced. But an actual song from a movie called China Gate is the song called Chumma Chumma, or something like that, is in Moulin Rouge. So as I say, a song and production design.
Okay. And what's the connection between, shall we say, MTV visualization of songs and Bollywood?
I would say that the Bollywood picturizations have slowly... Well, Bollywood has been using music/music picturizations since independence in India, which is, after World War II. But the style of it has become a little bit more influenced by MTV, a little more lush, certainly. But you will get that kind of quick zoom in, zoom outs, and a lot of cutting on the beat, et cetera. So if you go back, even in the 70s compared to the 90s, you do see the MTV influence, but it's not like MTV influence in the U.S. It's faster and it's slicker, but by no means the kind of outrageous stuff that you might see on MTV. And in fact, the MTV India will have a lot of picturizations as their music numbers. So if you go to India and turn on MTV, you will see the latest movie picturizations on their MTV. So it's kind of a circular influence.
So it's not just one way. in,
nope, not at all. Right.
On Bollywood, but Bollywood on MTV.
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
All right, and line number one. This is also somebody on cell phone. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I just had a question. I tuned in late, and I wondered if the actress Rai is related to the great director Satyajit Ray.
No.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Actually, she spells her name R-A-I, and he was R-A-Y.
Oh, yeah.
And he's a Bengali, and she isn't. I believe she may be Hindi, but the great director was Bengali. And he is the most – if you see a Bengali film today, they look like his movies. I've never seen a cinema that was so influenced by the work of one man. It's just incredible. But the Bengali cinema is almost, and the Bengali cinema is almost strictly an art cinema, precisely because of Satyajit Ray. It's fascinating.
Thank you.
All right, thanks. And he made so many really beautiful movies. I mean, just fabulous.
And not only that, but he grew and developed. His early films, are very kind of village-oriented, poverty, neo-realist. And then his later films are a lot more sardonic and even slick. But as I say, I just saw a Bengali film that with Miss Rai, I said, Satyajit Ray lives.
Yeah. Well, he certainly would be on anybody's list of the great directors in the history of world cinema.
There's no question about it. And what's interesting in terms of Bollywood versus, say, the Bengali, is the Hindi cinema, or let's say Bollywood, actors are very conscious of a kind of reputation and status. And so a number will deliberately go to work in what they call the parallel cinema, but we would call the art cinema. But they call the parallel cinema. So there's a couple of actors and actresses who'll go back and forth, and they'll say, well, I'll make my money in Bollywood and go back and then do the art. So, I mean, of course, there's Hollywood actors who do that as well. But that's an interesting thing, is the parallel cinema. And there's a Hindi art cinema, and there's, Bengali or... And what's, of course, interesting is, for the most part, Americans tend to place... It's changing a little bit, but we tend to place anything with subtitles in the art cinema category. But that's really not a good idea when you think that, Bollywood movies are not intended at all to be that parallel cinema. They're intended to appeal to a population of India's 1 billion. So you don't tend to make art movies with the intention of appealing to 1 billion people.
One of the things that I wondered about in these movies was to what extent the convention that we've talked about, using musical numbers interspersed with the dramatic action as a way, no doubt, of another way of portraying intense emotion, whether that was something that connects to traditional Indian dance and song and performance, or was this something that they somehow kind of invented and in a way borrowed from Western filmmaking?
That's a good question. My immediate response would be also to remember, for the most part, the Hindi cinema, which comes out of Bombay, which the India now calls Mumbai, but the Bombay or Mumbai cinema is the Hindi cinema. That is the cinema that has the greatest national distribution, whereas Tamil cinema, Telugu cinema, Gujarati, Punjabi are very much regional. So one answer I would say about the musical numbers is that you may or may not put subtitles on the songs, but the songs are a universal language. So you can get mass distribution. Now, of course, the Tamil and Telugu movies also have songs, but I do think the Hindi cinema is very conscious of its national distribution, and music is one way not to worry about, do people speak the language? Second of all, I think you're right about the national traditions. And you see this in the way that both music and dance are done. Music will often contain a lot of traditional elements, especially Punjabi, which is a drum-oriented music. So you can dance to it. It's got a good beat. You can dance to it. But the Punjabi music and dance moves that incorporate aspects of the tradition and with modern dancing. But that's why I think the Hindi industry was very interested in getting an Academy Award for Devdas, because it really used a strong reliance on updated traditional music and updated traditional dance. And I think they tried to use that tradition to be exotic, thinking that the Academy might like that exoticism with the updated elements. Mm. But, you know, what I think is interesting about Hindi cinema, on the other hand, is, one of their big hits of recent months, you got to go month by month, there are at least 4 or 5 films a month. One of the songs in the movie is called "It's the Time to Disco," which, of course, in the year 2004, it isn't the time to disco. But nevertheless, if it were the time to disco, it hardly has much of that traditional music and dance.
Our guest this morning, this part of Focus 580, is David Desser. He's professor of cinema studies at University of Illinois and is very interested in Asian cinema. So we've talked about that from time to time here on the program. But if you've never seen an Indian movie, you could still call in here. Maybe you have questions about something that you've seen or comments, or you want to recommend a movie, or you want, as I always like to say, if you've seen a movie you think that's just the worst thing ever and you want to tell people to stay away from this movie, any and all of those kind of questions are certainly welcome. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Well, I guess we're about to go into the summer blockbuster
Indeed.
Season, although I sort of think it seemed that it used to be the case that there were recognizable seasons when particular kind of movies were released, and I'm not sure that that's really so true anymore. That at least the kind of movies that we always used to think about, big-time special effects, action movies being something that you saw a lot in the summer, seems now you could see a movie like that could be released any time.
Well, yes, but I think what you don't see in the summer still is the serious dramas that, you know, still are saved for fall and winter. But I think what you just said is true, but that really reflects the way Hollywood is going more and more to blockbusters as their bread and butter, and that's really all they're making. I mean, there is the occasional, but I think they really want – Hollywood may distribute something that's not a huge budget action blockbuster, but they're not making them. All the movies they make are pretty much on the side of you got to spend $100 million in budget before you're even talking about prints and promotion. So it's really I think that's what you're really saying is, but also the summer season gets to be sooner and sooner. It's like, oh, here it is. We're in the summer now, which, you know, the weather outside may or may not reflect that. But the summer is certainly well before. It used to be Memorial Day to Labor Day, but now it's somehow we need to find a holiday in April because that's when the movies are getting released.
Easter.
Oh yes, except for. The hilarious blockbuster, the Passion of the Christ.
Well, yes.
Yeah, but no, it's. I think that's what it is, and you see more and more, especially even at the Christmas season, where, you know, the Harry Potter movie is. Although they're releasing the new one in the summer, right? The Harry Potter and the is going to be a summer blockbuster instead of a pre-Thanksgiving the way it had been. So I think they're moving it up. But when you think about Lord of the Rings or the previous Harry Potter movies coming out in the fall, that's hardly when you think about Lord of the Rings getting 11 Academy Awards, it's not that the serious movies are coming to the summer. It's that all the blockbusters are going to the winter. Mm-hmm. But this summer, there's plenty of the blockbuster-type movies to be seen more and more than ever. But I'm still thinking that Hollywood is more interested in the global audience than they are, say, in the adult audience, because that's where I think they're again lacking, and that's in grown-up movies, whereas they're substituting, you know, international audiences for grown-up audiences. Yeah.
Well, that's I was reading something about this the other day, and I think it's interesting the way that Hollywood has changed the way that it thinks about where you make your money and how you make your money. And there was a time when, well, that was all about people going to the theater and paying their money and putting their behind in the seat here in the United States. But it is the fact now so much of your money is you're making either on distribution outside of the
Yes.
United States, but even more and more now is what you make from selling DVDs, and also I guess there are still people out there who are watching movies on videotape, but
only in the U.S. The rest of the world is abandoned. What it is the way you can see this change is that Hollywood releases its blockbuster movies what's called day and date with overseas. They'll release a movie the same day the world over. They used to release it maybe 6 months, a year, a few months. Partly they do day and date to combat video piracy, where a movie that comes out in the U.S. on Friday is for sale in mainland China on Monday, or the Monday before it opens in the U.S.
Yeah.
But by opening day and date, you still get that theatrical business. But the theatrical business now is to prepare people, I think, for two things. One, for the DVD release, but also for the special edition DVD release. And that's really becoming an interesting business. Somebody at one of the Ebertfest panels said, why do you people in the audience think Tarantino's Kill Bill was released in Volume 1 and Volume 2? Was it because it was such a great masterpiece it needed all this? He said, I don't think so. I think it was because you can release Kill Bill Volume 1 on DVD, Kill Bill Volume 2 on DVD, and then Kill Bill the Complete Movie on DVD.
With and I said, interviews that's an interesting, with Quentin Tarantino,
and of course they have all
that kind of stuff.
But, you know, the idea that you can release one movie in three different versions on DVD is just incredible. And all of the rings, Lord of the Rings has all of that business, you know, and the special, you know, I have the director's cut of this, then later on you get the special edition director's cut, and that's where the big money is, but the theatrical release is like the preparation for the DVD release. But if you make $300 million, nobody's going to complain.
Let's talk with some other people. let's see, Urbana, line number one.
Yes, line number one.
Yes, hello.
Your time is almost halfway through, and more than halfway through, and I haven't heard the word Iranian movies yet. Could you guest tell us something about the new Iranian movies, the artsy stuff that they put out?
I can say that there hasn't been a single Iranian movie that I've seen that I haven't liked. And I can say if you go to the video store and you see any Iranian movie rented, they are all the ones that I've seen. Now, of course, they're self-selecting. The ones that will show up on video here will be good. But some time back, I remember David and I talked about the Children of Heaven. Mm-hmm. And, all of them. I mean, it's an incredible cinema that deserves to be seen perhaps more in theaters. But any Iranian movie that you can see, rent. I have nothing but the highest praise.
But are they making the mass market like those schlocky Indian movies do?
I wouldn't call them schlocky Indian movies. I would call them commercial Indian movies.
Okay, right.
But I would say that the Iranian industry is a lot more subject to censorship. But if they do make, say, mainstream commercial movies, they haven't come over here. You know what most countries do that don't have major cinemas is they make their commercial stuff on television. So that the real sort of national culture in Europe is on television. So that the French are the only ones that really care that much about cinema. But in Germany and in Italy and even in England to a certain extent, a lot of your kind of national culture and TV is protected by various laws, how much, especially American TV, can you show. And it's the same thing with smaller countries like Australia. That shows up. So I would imagine that the Iranian mainstream entertainments are on television.
Actually, I've lived there, and I know all those Indian movies come to
and
Tehran.
Yeah, thanks.
And they're big, big blockbusters.
Yes, thank you for pointing that out. Outside of the U.S., but especially in the Middle East and in Africa, Indian movies are very popular. One of the reasons they're popular is, of course, they have a huge Muslim population in India already, and so they're sensitive, except they have a lot of movies with a lot of anti-Pakistan propaganda. But the kinds of censorship and values that Indian movies have are very much in keeping with North African or even sub-Saharan African.
Well, actually, the interest, at least when I was very young, was the subtly erotic things that were in those Indian movies.
In the dances.
No, like the two main characters swimming about 20 feet away from each other, naked, and singing some love songs mm-hmm. together.
No, it's true. They would, all of their movies, maybe PG-13 would be the most they would get, but generally they might be PG. They don't, and it's rare to see actual kissing. So in a certain way, well, just like I always compare it to the Fred Astaire, Ginger Rogers movies of the 30s. You don't have sex, you have dance. Mm-hmm. But that's a way in which, but they are, the Indian movies are hugely, in fact, someone told me that Indian movies, for whatever reason, have traditionally been very popular in Russia. So you have a global audience that's not Indian, that's not NRI, but we just don't see it so much in the U.S. A few months ago, one of the Indian movies was on the top 10 most popular films of the week in London. So just, you know, you can see a lot of, now it may have to do with the very big population there, but it also has to do, I think, with the very big Indian populations may also get some more adventurous film goers. When I lived in When I lived in Los Angeles years ago, they used to have Japanese language movie theaters. And for the most part, I was the only non-Japanese. But as the years went by, I lived in Los Angeles 6 years. As the years went by, you might see five or six non-Japanese in the theater. So you start to get your, you know, not your native audience when you show films in theaters. Or it slips over into a mainstream theater, and that's the way. But I'm glad you brought up the idea that Indian movies are very popular elsewhere. But Iranian movies tend to be very, very good. And there's a
but they're sort of too esoteric, right?
They shouldn't be seen as too esoteric. They tend to be about families. They tend to be about children. The Day I Became a Woman, for instance, is now available, and that's a universal theme of, you know, I wouldn't say women's oppression, but women's struggles with, you know, universal themes. And I think they're
also painting-like, you know, they really frame the scenery so beautifully.
Well, I think Abbas Kiarostami has a much greater, let's say, a greater consciousness about framing, whereas some of the other directors, there's a whole family, it's a very interesting, the Makhmalbaf family,
right.
Is you get born into that family, you will become a film director, the women as well. So whatever is out there, I certainly recommend. Now, of course, it's paced a little bit differently, and it doesn't typically have the explosive violence and certainly none of the sex. But there's something nice about that, isn't there?
Actually, they have movies of that sort, but they're all historical. The ones with the violence and wars and so on. And they're made for just local consumption.
Yeah, I haven't seen those.
Thank you.
Thank you for the call. Let's go again to someone here on the campus on line two. Hello.
Yeah, hi. I missed the first half of this, but I wanted to call in and encourage people to see Dogville. I think that's going to be coming to the Art Theater. I'm not sure if you mentioned it yet.
No, I haven't mentioned it yet. Don't know when it's coming. I can't encourage people to see a movie I haven't seen yet, but I'm going to be there. So I agree with you. I'm looking forward to seeing Dogville, but not having seen it, it's hard to comment.
Yeah, I saw it at the Jane Siskel Film Center. It's almost 3 hours.
He's not the most commercially minded of the famous directors, is he?
No. But what was surprising was that despite all the talk about it being anti-American, people were really engaged by the movie, and they even sat, after 3 hours, they sat through all the credits, almost 95% of the people. It's amazing. But anyway, I also want to mention that I really enjoyed, speaking of French films, I thought Triplets of Belleville was terrific.
Yes.
Wonderful.
And they were smart, because knowing that they had a kind of, well, it's an animated movie, but thinking that animated movies are, you know, often for children, they made one that's not, but also very little dialogue. So they really made it universal. But that's such a clever movie. They have every so often the French come out with an animated movie that's really sophisticated and interesting.
I was thinking of the
Le Planète Sauvage. I don't remember what they called it in English. I don't know. I don't know if they called it Savage Planet or something back in the 60s. But Le Planète Sauvage is a great sci-fi animated movies of that period. As I say, I forget what the English title is of that. Fantastic Planet. Fantastic Planet. It's a fantastic movie.
Yeah, I think I remember that one.
Yeah, yeah.
But But the Triplets of Belleville, I think, really got shafted for the Academy Awards.
Well, it got nominated for, well, just for music, for the song, right?
Well, I don't know. It just seemed to me that I thought I read someplace that there was a battle between that and Finding Nemo. And,
oh, yeah. No, you're right. But, you know, anyone who put their money on Triplets of Belleville was not knowing what the Academy Award does. But people loved Finding Nemo. You know, you can't... say anything about that. I didn't see Finding Nemo.
I saw parts of it because we've got kids in the family. But
well, see,
I
now
the family.
My daughter's all grown up. I can't go see them.
But it's not. It's not Triplets. But anyway, I wanted to mention that you can rent a French movie called Chaos, which I thought was really...
Chaos.
Yeah, you really ought to catch that. It's got a Muslim lead, and yet it's very anti-Islam. It depicts an Islamic family as... and it's terrible toll on the female in this one case.
Hmm.
And I wanted to ask you one quick question, and I'll hang up. One of Ebert's films, and I missed it, was The Son. And I was curious if you knew if that's available on DVD or VHS, because I can't seem to find it anywhere.
No.
It's not.
Right.
No,
but it may be. I mean, afterwards, but it's not.
Okay. Well, thanks a lot.
All right. Thank you. We're coming down to, we have about 10 minutes left, maybe, in this part of Focus 580. David Desser is our guest. He's professor of cinema studies at University of Illinois. And every once in a while, is here. We talk about movies and questions, comments, whatever's on your mind, that's certainly welcome. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. Next caller is down in southeastern Illinois on our toll free line, line 4. Hello.
Yes, I don't want to go into the subject too much, but just a quick question. Are those Iranian movies dubbed or subtitled?
Subtitled.
Subtitled, okay. Since I don't see the movies in movie houses, I see them on television or when they get to rental tape rentals or cable. I'm the one that has hit me and that I've liked so much, and I don't know whether it came out before you went on sabbatical or while you were on sabbatical, Chicago, the musical Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And in the first place, it's got a number of things that's interesting, and first, it's got Renee Zellweger, who is a throwback to the Golden Age. I mean, she really is a terrific performer, I think.
I would actually say that about Catherine Zeta-Jones.
Well, that's true, too, yes. But
I would say that about both of them.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah.
They were running another movie by Catherine, I think she calls herself Zeta. But,
Zeta, you're right.
But anyway... she was on another pay-per-view movie about that time, and I would like to have seen it in a way, but I thought I liked her so much in Chicago, I didn't want to ruin it. Maybe seeing her something I didn't like her quite so much in. I regretted the days, if it had been in the, she really is a dancer.
Mm-hmm.
And if these had been the good old network television days, she'd have been on every variety show.
Yes.
On television, doing a real dance, where instead of that MTV cut-up thing that she did.
It's funny that the death of the variety show has really, you know, the kind of people who can. What's surprising to me about American entertainers, you know, people you see on mediocre TV shows, is how talented so many of those people really are. They can often really sing and really dance, and there's virtually no place for that. In television, certainly not in television in the days of there's no more variety shows, but even in movies. And I'm thinking of, for instance, someone like the recently, sadly departed Gregory Hines, who was a pretty good singer, a heck of a good dancer.
Yeah, yeah.
And except for when he did some, you know, the occasional thing on TV, he was reduced to guest starring on Will and Grace. You know, you got to work. But this was just a shame that these people can't. So when you see Chicago and someone, you know, people can really dance and sing, it's a pleasure. It really is.
That is the first, as far as I can remember, that is the first musical that has come out in decades that has used Tin Pan Alley type songs. I mean, we've been getting things like Oscar and Hammerstein, and or Rogers and Hammerstein, rather, and Weber. And
well, remember, Chicago was originally a stage musical, I think, in the 70s.
Yeah.
So, you know, all it is, I mean, not all it is, but it's an adaptation of you know, one of the last of the classical type. I mean, it's not a classical musical because its subject is kind of grim. You don't tend, you know, in the Rodgers and Hammerstein days, you didn't make musicals about the women who killed their husbands and the criminals and all that. But in terms of a lot of its style, I remember, I mean, it was a very successful musical, partly because Bob Fosse introduced a little bit more sex and raunch into the dance numbers. But basically, he just extended the classic musical, which is fine with me as a big fan of the classic musical. But, you know, Chicago was a kind of throwback and not one of these newfangled musicals that, that you know, besides having no choreography, also doesn't use that kind of music.
Yeah. You talked about it being grim. I thought what was interesting about it was that it was probably the first one since Pal Joey where there wasn't a single person in there that was
likable.
Likable, yeah. or a good person.
Yeah,
except
I agree.
Except the husband, and he was just there for to make... let other people show how lousy they were in relation to him.
Yeah, no, that's true. I agree. Yeah. But what makes a movie, even about bad people good, is the artistry of the filmmaking.
Well, I thought that what they were actually doing, that it was kind of a joke, because I thought that the makers of that movie were doing the same thing to the audience that Flynn was doing to the jurors and and the people of Chicago. He was razzle-dazzling.
He was.
In fact,
he was.
They named the heroine Roxy Hart. I mean, she's got a heart like a rock.
Oh.
She was thoroughly selfish.
Yeah. No, but that's the... I remember when the musical came out, on Broadway / in Chicago.
Yeah.
So it's an adaptation of the show, just they thought it was right. Now, a lot of adaptations of successful Broadway shows have flopped, and I'm thinking of Evita, for instance.
As a movie. You
as
mean.
A movie. Yeah. As a movie. So.
Perone's wife, you mean?
Yeah, Madonna was in the film, and she was fine, but no one really wanted to see the musical version of a pretty successful.
Yeah.
But that would have been more in the Weber and...
well, that's right. It is Weber.
Right. Is it Weber?
It's Rice and Weber.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it was just a throwback, and it's been, it's one of those things where the music and the... Even if you don't like the people, the razzle-dazzle leaves you smiling at the end of the movie.
Right.
Or did me.
It just...
Okay, thank,
okay
you.
Thank you. It reminded me about talking about crossovers, if you will. Mm-hmm. On Broadway... starting in a week or so, opening on Broadway, Bollywood Dreams.
Oh, there was a piece about it in the...
And it opened in England first, but that's what I mean by the crossover of people are getting the Bollywood convention. So Bollywood Dreams will be a Broadway show. And will that be a Hollywood musical?
Then it's curious that, maybe the audiences for Broadway shows aren't quite what they have been, but certainly some of them, and maybe there you also have to do it something of the blockbuster scale,
yes,
have been popular. But we don't see, there's no movie vision of Les Mis or of Miss Saigon.
No, but...
Or of Sweeney Todd for,
There was a TV version of, just a kind of videoization of it. But one of the things I would say, though, is look how many of the Broadway musicals are actually based on films. Beauty and the Beast comes to mind, Hairspray.
Lion King.
The Lion King, Hairspray, which is a kind of musical, the John Waters. So a lot of the Broadway shows, but you're right. But what I would say is some of these Broadway shows are so intensely, I do not know how you would do the musical Les Mis at all, because it's so brilliantly done as theater. Whereas a few years ago, there was a Liam Neeson version of Les Miserables.
Why?
Yes. So without any music. So, to some extent, you run into the problem of how do you do a real good job of taking a theatrical work and putting it onto film, as well as how do you... Even 42nd Street is another one that, which was a musical. What do you call it? The famous Sunset Boulevard. So, half of Broadway musicals. The other thing is the Broadway musical has skews older, as they say in the business. So the people who go to see Broadway shows aren't quite the same people who go to see the movies. Yeah. At $100 a pop, soon movies will be $100 a pop. But the difference between $8 or $9 and $100 is still a substantial difference.
That's right. It costs you $50 for a popcorn.
And well, every time I go to the movies and get popcorn, I keep feeling like I keep deja vu. Why is it costing me more for popcorn and a soda than it did to get in the movie? But that's another story.
We're coming down to the end here. One of the things that I ask when you're here, and this time you actually said, oh, yeah, I'm ready for that.
I am.
Say, if you want to go out to rent something, is there anything in the way of recent releases that you think were good and you'd say to people, you know, if you didn't see this movie, maybe you'd like to try that out?
Yes, I have a few. And the one that I really want to push is, I think, the movie that was maybe the most underrated movie of the last Christmas season, and that is Big Fish. I really think Big Fish is literally a great family movie. And then I would say, for the people who like French films or even maybe don't like French films, this one will work, Man on the Train.
Ooh, yes, I saw that.
Surprisingly good, a surprisingly interesting film. And then for the Anglophiles, of which I am a secret Anglophile, Love Actually. And then I was also thinking about a Boy, which I don't think did quite as well here as it did overseas. So About a Boy is so Big Fish, Man on the Train, Love Actually. And if you didn't see About a Boy, also with you, Grant, I would say these are my video picks.
Thank you very much for being here.
Pleasure as always.
David Desser, he's professor of cinema studies at the University of Illinois.